Welcome to the Unshakable Habits Podcast, where we help you to build the habits and routines that help build the life you want so you can turn everyday actions into powerful wins for your health, mindset, relationships, faith, and professional growth. I am your host, Stephen Box. And guys, today we're going to talk about a subject that I know a lot of you can relate to. Why is change so difficult? And what can we actually do about it? Now, you're probably familiar with the old G.I. Joe saying that knowing is half the battle. And I think for a lot of us, the problem isn't information. We know what we should be doing or what we need to be doing, or at least have a pretty good idea. The problem a lot of times is actually taking action on these things. Now, my guest today, Mr. Sanjeev Nadi, is going to give you a lot of great insight. And through our conversation, I think you guys are going to get a lot of really valuable nuggets. Now, before we get into our interview today, I did want to also invite you guys to the Unshakable Habits Book Club. This is 100% free. We're going to meet on Zoom every Saturday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can come, you can join the conversation. You can leave your camera off, you have your mic off, and just listen in. Totally optional. I'll include a link in the show notes where you can join us for free. With that, allow me to introduce my guest today, Mr. Sanjeev Nadi.
Thank you, Stephen, for inviting me in your podcast. I hope I can give some information tips and tools for your audience.
Oh, I know you can, because we've already had the pre-interview. We've talked about it. I know you got some value to bring today. Looking forward to hearing it.
Thank you very much. Just a brief introduction about myself. My name is Sanjeev Nadi. I was born and brought up in India. I lived there for 26 years. And in 2002, I moved to London, and I lived and worked there for 5 years. And in 2008, I came to the United States, and I have been living here for the past 14 years. I wrote my first book in 2021, The Man with Zero Talent, and it's about self-help and self-improvement. And in 2022, I launched my first app, which is called Dovo. It's a free app, again, for health and wellness. And from 2013 to 2017, I was struggling in my life. I was not sure what to do in my life and how to improve myself. Each passing day, I was sinking deeper and deeper. And after struggling for 3 or 4 years, I knew that I have to do something. That led me to this journey of self-transformation. So I started my self-transformation journey in 2017, and it took me 2 or 3 years to figure it out how we can come out from negativity to positivity. And once you come out of this positivity, how to become a better version of yourself. And the whole point of me writing this book is to give a clear-cut roadmap to anybody who wants to improve their life.
Okay. So if we can back up for just a second there. So you gave us two things that I want to touch on. So number one is the book is The Man with Zero Talent. Very interesting title, right? So is that because you see yourself as someone who didn't have any talent, or is it more just a matter of that focus of saying you don't need to have talent to be able to change yourself?
So the title of the book is The Man with Zero Talent. And again, it's a very interesting title, according to me. And what I believe is no human beings is born talented. Mm-hmm. When we are born, we don't know how to fend ourselves. We acquire these talents over a period of time. Mm-hmm. And any human being can become better, and they can reach their full potential in any field they wanted to be. So that is the whole purpose I wanted to title my book as The Man with Zero Talent, because there is immense potential in every human being. The only thing is you have to tap inside yourself, find that talent. And as you said, consistency is the key. And once you are consistent in a period of time, you will be definitely successful.
And the second thing that you talked about was, you just glanced over, but you said there was a period of time where you really struggled and you were stuck in negativity. Take us there a little bit. What was going on in your life at that time?
For 3 or 4 years, I was dealing with circumstances which is beyond my control. I was in a period of negativity and thinking the same thoughts over and over again. Stephen, as you know, that we go through 35,000 to 70,000 thoughts per day. And 90% of these thoughts are the same as the day before. And most of these thoughts are negative. And when you are in a negative state of mind, you know, you keep repeating the same thought and it becomes harder for you to come out of negativity and become something better. So the same thing was happening with me. I was not able to overcome a negative thought. So I was in that situation for 3 or 4 years, which is a very long period. And once you stay for that long period about something, it becomes very hard for yourself to pull out of that negativity.
Yeah.
And I was in that state. I was at the rock bottom. I knew that I have to do something now. Otherwise, the ship is going to sink.
Yeah.
So from that point, I started working on myself. I started implementing meditation in my routine. And after 6 to 8 weeks, I was able to see some kind of improvement, which led me to do other things like exercise, cold showers, healthy eating. And eventually, the trajectory of my life changed.
Yeah. Just going back here for a second and touching on something you said, because I want to point this out to people. You talked about how many thoughts we have in a day. And it made me think about a conversation I had last week, because I actually lead a small group Bible study through my church. And one of the, I forget how the topic even came up, but we were reading this book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry is the name of the book. And we were talking about this, and one of the ladies in the group said, it's hard for us women because we have so many thoughts running through our head, we can't turn our brain off. That's a real struggle and it causes all the stress. She's, you guys are lucky I don't have that problem. And I started thinking about it and I was like, that's not true. I mean, us guys have tons of thoughts running through our head. But then I realized something. A lot of women that I hear that talk about this idea of their thoughts not turning off, it's always considered a weakness. It's always an overwhelming thing. It's always a stressor. Whereas a lot of men, when they are thinking about multiple things at once, they think of it like a superpower. It's a positive, right? It's, that's why you don't hear men complain about it, because it's a different perspective. And it just, when you said that, it made me think about it, because I was like, that ties in perfectly to what you're saying here, that when we get ourselves into a negative loop, it's so hard to get out because every thought you have is a confirmation of that negative loop. And anything that doesn't confirm your negative loop just gets thrown out. Versus when you start thinking positively and you start looking at things in a positive light, the exact opposite happens, right? That feeds more positivity.
Yes, definitely. So, you know, just to give a little bit of light into that, that when we are young, we are all happy. 10 or 11, or whether it's men or a woman or a girl or a boy, everybody is happy. By the time we reach 15 or 16, we have an overrun of hormone changes. And these hormonal changes are biological. And by the time we reach 20, men are more inclined to sex and anger. And women are more inclined to anxiety and depression. And what happens is, if you look in the brain, that our brain weighs 3 pounds, which is about 20 to 25% of the actual weight of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And our brain is very lazy. It's men or women, it doesn't matter. It's a very lazy brain, and it tries to avoid us from doing the things which is hard. It tries to tell us to think about the same thing over and over again. By default, because the brain is made us to help us survive.
Mm-hmm.
And it will tell us to do the same things over and over again. So that is the reason the default mode takes in, and we are in a, you know, loop of negativity because we are in the phase of survival. And until and unless we are able to think greater than the situation, we are not able to overcome that negativity. But yeah, the negativity part is quite similar in men and women. It's tend to be a little bit higher on a woman's side, as I say, because of the hormonal changes. And it becomes a little bit tricky. Because why? Because a restless mind is like a monster. It can make your life a nightmare. But the same mind, when controlled, can make your life happy and peaceful. So it's all about how you are able to regulate your emotion and your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. We're having this conversation here about the way the brain functions. And something I talk about a lot is this idea that your brain is, as you said, wired for survival, right? That is your brain's number one job, is to keep you alive. And the absolute safest thing in the world for your brain is familiarity. Because when things are familiar, your brain knows what to expect and knows the patterns and knows how to react to things. When you start doing stuff different, your brain's, hold up, uncharted territory, don't know what's going on, unsafe, right? And when we start with like smaller practices and give our brain a little leeway to feel safe because we're not doing anything too out there, and we build upon those and we become consistent, all of a sudden the new behaviors become familiar. And once those new behaviors become familiar, all of a sudden our brain's, okay, this is safe because I know this. But if we just try to change everything at once overnight, your brain's, stop, too much, danger.
Yes, absolutely right. I have written a chapter in my book, which is called Kaizen, which means small, consistent change over a period of time.
Yes.
If you're telling our brain you have to go for a jog the next day, or you have to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, your brain will take it as a negative thing because you're not used to waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, neither you are used to jogging it in the morning. But if I tell your brain, okay, you wake up at 8 o'clock, wake up at 7:55, your brain will say, okay, it's a piece of cake. If I tell you, you have to just walk a block tomorrow, your brain will say it's a piece of cake. It will not go against it. And then you can eventually improve on it. You can do 2 blocks and then 3 blocks. And then over a course of period, you will see so much of improvement. So that's, again, it's a control of who is in charge of this brain. Whether you are in charge of this brain or this brain is in charge of you, because it's either or. Somebody is in charge of this mind or the brain, and we have to make sure that we are in control of this mind. Otherwise, mind is going to cause havoc in our life.
Yeah, there's really two brains there, right? There's our instinctual brain, and that's really where our emotions come from, right? And emotions, for those who maybe think like emotions are just like happy, anger, whatever, emotion is by definition your internal or external response to your thoughts, right? That's what emotions are. And yes, happiness and anger are emotions, but I think sometimes we insist on putting a label on and we limit that definition of what an emotion actually is. So when you can get that part of your brain to start to see things differently, that's the one that has all the control, right? We like to think that the logical part of our brain is in control because it's the rational. A good friend of mine, and I quote this a lot, but a mentor and a good friend of mine actually has this quote that I love, which is that we are neither rational or irrational beings. We're post-rational beings. Meaning, we're really good at just finding everything after we've done it or after we've decided to do it.
Yes, absolutely true. Any human being, they are first going to react emotionally because that's how we are wired. The impulse which is coming from inside or outside, it first reaches the emotional brain, and then the circuit or impulse reaches the thinking or the logical brain, which is the neocortex or the frontal lobe. So there is a gap between the emotional brain and the logical brain. So that is the reason every human being, he may be highly qualified, he may be a doctor or he may be a pharmacist. It doesn't matter. The emotional brain is going to react faster than the thinking brain. And to narrow the gap, so that our thinking brain takes over, we have to do some of the habits which will narrow the gap. And what I have figured out in my reading and in about research about how we can implicit the gap between the rational and the logical brain is through mindfulness or meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, these emotional brain, if you are able to control your emotion for 10 or 15 seconds, the response will go to the logical brain. And once the logical brain is acting, you know what is right and what is not right.
Yeah.
Giving you example, before I started mindfulness or meditation, I was very impulsive, any human being.
Mm-hmm.
But once I started the meditation, after 1 or 2 years, I'm able to watch my own emotion. I know I'm getting angry and I know why I'm getting angry. And I know this emotion will pass after 5 or 10 minutes and I will be in my normal self.
Yeah. 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 We have to figure out, like, how do we get that emotional reactive brain to react the way we want it to in that moment, right? That's the key. And like you said, it's going to react before your logical brain does. So that's why a lot of times when we get angry or whatever, our reaction comes out, and as it's coming out, our logical brain is just catching up, and we're like, ah, it's already out. Okay, never mind.
Damage has been done by that time. And you realize after 5-10 minutes, you shouldn't have reacted in that way. It happens within every human being.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how do we start getting our brain rewired to be able to catch ourselves before we say something that we shouldn't say or do something we shouldn't do or react in a way we shouldn't react.
So as I say, that meditation is one of the tools to do it. And just to explain a little bit of meditation, that meditation is a form of deep mindful concentration on an object, place, thing, or just on your breath. So it's a form of exercise tailored specifically for your brain. It has nothing to do with any kind of religion, because we all need concentration to live a fruitful life, to live to accomplish our goals. You can be a scientist, you can be a professor, teacher, dentist, any profession. We have to focus and concentrate to accomplish our task. And that is the role of meditation. What we are trying to do in mindfulness or meditation, to have a single thought.
Yeah.
And once we are having a single thought, we are controlling this restless mind and we are controlling this emotional brain at the same time, because our mind is jumping from one thought to the other thought. It's compared to a drunken monkey who is jumping from one tree to another without purpose. That's hard. That's what happened to our thoughts. And it's any human being. You might be thinking about something and the next minute you are thinking about something different. And sometimes it's hard to figure it out why. It seems weird. I was thinking something different now and my thought is completely different at the next
minute. Yeah.
And sometimes it is the hard way we have to learn it. Okay, that this mind is very powerful,
mm-hmm.
but it is very restless at the same time. So
yeah.
How we can have a single thought so that we can accomplish greater things in our life. and control this emotional brain. Because once you are able to control this emotional brain, you are able to understand and you are able to give a logical explanation to whatever is happening. So that is one of the ways any human being can do it, is meditation or mindfulness.
Yeah. And I want to dive more into the meditation conversation here in a second, but I want to take a pause here and just help people see what we've talked about so far, really connect this back to what we promised people at the beginning, which is we're going to take you from I know what I should be doing to actually starting to take action on it. And the thing I want to point out at this point is, if you think about the way that we were just conversating about the brain and the way that works, what you'll start to see is that all of your thoughts, all those things that you know you should be doing, are things that are coming from your logical brain. They're not coming from that subconscious brain. They're not coming from that emotional brain. And part of the reason why it's so difficult for most of us guys to make changes is because we're trying to make everything happen from our logical brain, which is always playing catch up to our emotional brains. And so what we're diving into now as we continue this conversation is, how do we start getting those two brains in alignment with one another? And how do we actually start to get our subconscious brain to get on board with the things that we want to accomplish?
Very well said, Stephen. Just one more point I wanted to put at this point is, our brain is a pleasure-seeking machine or animal. We want pleasure all the time, to the point that it becomes a hedonic pleasure. Because when we are doing any pleasure activity, it releases dopamine. And once dopamine is released, we feel happy. So anything which is challenging or anything is difficult, our brain tells not to do it. And we want instant gratification. We don't want to wait for 6 months or 1 year to accomplish something. So that is one of the reasons that we don't try different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 100% agree. So as we think about those things, and we start looking at some of the tools. So we'll just use meditation for right now. Like you said, it's not the only tool, but it's definitely a good place for a lot of people to start. And I would just throw out there for people who hear the word meditation and instantaneously get scared off because they have this preconceived notion about what meditation is or whatever. There are literally hundreds of examples, probably thousands of examples of meditation in some form or another being used in basically every religion in the world. It's been used by people who don't even practice any kind of religion or spirituality. It's literally thousands of examples of people using meditation in one form or another all throughout history. So this is not some new thing. It's not sitting with your legs crossed and humming or whatever, right? You can do that if that's your thing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But I think for a lot of people, they think that's what it has to be. And that's not what meditation has to be. It's like you said, it's really just about a time period of focus, right?
Yes. It's basically to improve your focus and concentration. And as you mentioned that, we don't have to sit in a lotus position. You can sit in a chair. You can sit in your sofa. You can sit in your bed. As long as your back is straight or your spine is straight, that's what it matters. Because all the communication between the brain and the body is happening through the spine, which is the central nervous system.
So just want to make sure I'm understanding here. So you're saying the most important thing is having our back straight, having our spine straight. That's really going to allow to make sure all those connections between the brain and the rest of our body are in alignment. They're able to communicate with each other. And also, I know you didn't say this part, but I'm already assuming this has a lot to do with our breath as well, because I know our back needs to be straight for us to breathe well as well.
Yes, definitely. You can concentrate on your breath. Like when you are inhaling it, you can just just assume the breath is going through the diaphragm and exhale that breath is coming outside. And breath, why breath? Because breath is the thing which is always present with you. And that is the thing you can concentrate on.
Yep. And there are a lot of studies, a lot of research out there that actually backs up the idea that our breathing is a great way to actually control our stress response. And you talked earlier about negative thoughts versus positive thoughts. One of the major things that contributes to that is our current level of stress.
Yes, definitely. When we are breathing, we activate the sympathetic nervous system.
Yep.
So when the sympathetic when we breathe slowly, it activates the parasympathetic nervous system. And when the parasympathetic nervous system is activated, it decreases your heart rate, your blood pressure, your cholesterol, your insulin level. So everything gets controlled because you are activating the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and the recovery mode. When you are in a fight or flight mode, which is the sympathetic nervous system, you are rushing all the blood to the arms and legs. You are stressed out, the cortisol level in the body is more, and that leads to more stress and more diseases in the body.
Yeah, I think people miss this idea of like stress is good, right? When we have just enough stress to motivate us, right? That's a good thing. When stress becomes problematic is when it is consistent and when we're overloaded, right? So yeah. For example, the flight or fight syndrome. If I'm in a dangerous situation, my stress response kicks in flight or fight, and I either fight off my danger or I flee and get out of there. And so in that instance, a stress response is fantastic because it kept me alive.
Oh, yeah.
But that stressor is long lasting and it is cumulative, meaning that it just gets worse and worse over time. Eventually, that's when it becomes problematic.
Yes, definitely. Acute stress is not bad. As you mentioned, that helps for the survival. But when that stress becomes chronic, when you are thinking the same thought over and over again, when it becomes chronic, then it is downhill. Because stress is always going to be here, Stephen. It is not going to go away. Because fear is the main reason which is stopping us from doing greater things in our life. Everybody and fear system is engraved in our brain, which is the amygdala, which is the fight or flight response. Every human being has it, which helps us to survive. It has been there for millions of years, and it helped us survive our ancestors. We don't need it today, but it is still there. We don't have any big predators like lion or tigers, but we have normal stress like our neighbors or going to work or our spouses. Those are the things which is giving us stress. But when it becomes chronic, you are thinking over and over again, then it becomes a problem.
Yeah. And by the way, just to tie this back to what we said earlier, the emotional brain doesn't think about things. It doesn't take the time to figure stuff out. To it, the difference between something going on with your neighbor and a tiger chasing you, there is no difference. It's the exact same thing, right? It's not until later on when our logical brain gets to finally kick in that we go, oh, that's not that big of a deal. It's just my neighbor, right? So it's, you know, from a emotional reaction standpoint, your body is going to react the exact same way to you getting, you know, into with your neighbor, getting cut off in traffic, or getting to argue with your wife as it would if you're being chased by a tiger.
Yes. Yep. Same thing, because it will release the stress hormone in the body. There is a direct connection through the neocortex, which or the frontal lobe, and through the adrenal gland, which is the adrenal medulla, which is just located above the kidneys. And so in simple terms, the brain tells the body to release stress hormone in stressful situation. And once this stressful hormones is released, it decreases immunity in the body. Once the immunity decreases, you have to deal with different diseases in the body.
Yeah.
So again, this mind and body is not separate entities. This is all interwoven in mind-body relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, something that was very interesting for me, being a health coach and having to study the body, is I always observed this idea of, it's interesting that we have a left and right hemisphere in our brains. We have an emotional part of our brain. We have a logical part of our brain. We also have, you know, basically we have a brain in our stomachs, and then we have our brain in our head. We have these two different nervous systems. It's interesting when you start to look at all the parts in our body that actually are two different things, and they're opposite of each other. And so when people start to go, why is this so hard to change? Why is it so hard to just do these things? Your body is literally fighting against itself in you pretty much all the time.
Yes, Steve, you have a very greater knowledge and understanding of the mind and body, because understanding these things is important. Once you have the knowledge and your audience have the knowledge, it's easier to change. Just to give you a little bit idea of the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere, like the persons who are left-brainers, they are good at analytical reasoning, or more practical, good at maths and science. The person who are more right-brainer, they are good at arts, good at intuitive. And once you become whole-brainers, you can use both your left and right brain. Then your clarity, focus, you become a better version of yourself.
Yeah.
And just to relate it to mindfulness or meditation, increases the thickness and volume of the corpus callosum, which is joining the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. So once that thickness joins, once you are able to use both sides of the brain, you become definitely much more better than what you used to be before. And just touching the point about our gut health, which is again very important. And as you are aware that 90% of the serotonin is produced in our gut.
Yeah,
we have to make sure that we are eating healthy at the same time, because life is not about taking care of one individual thing. It's having a holistic approach. You have to see your body, mind, and your habits as one thing, and what you can do to improve yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a couple things that you just hit on there when we start looking at this idea of meditation and mindfulness is, number one, it is a reset, right? Because by activating that parasympathetic system, it's literally called the rest and digest system. It's literally what it's called. When we give our body an opportunity to actually activate that system, we are literally resetting things. We talked earlier about how stress only becomes problematic when it is long-term and cumulative. And part of the way that we get to long-term and cumulative stress is by not having regular resets, right? That's why something like mindfulness and meditation is so important, because it gives us literally a reset to our stress levels. The other thing is, you talked about it connecting the two parts of your brain, literally physically helping to connect those two parts of your brain so that you can start to see things with more clarity.
Yes, absolutely right.
Yeah. And then I love your point about nutrition, exercise goes in that same category. And those are things that, if you actually listen to the majority of the episodes that I've done on here, what you hear over and over again is that people usually started with something else, and then that something else led to better exercise and better nutrition. Most of us, especially here in Western culture, here in the United States, are very focused on the diet, right? What exercise do I need to do? And you can do that. But I always try to tell people, nutrition is more about being aware of what you're eating. And it's really about how you think about eating and all those things versus just food itself. And then exercise, at least to me, is partly, of course, to build your body up. But it's really about building more mental strength than it is anything else. And that's why a lot of times when you see people start to develop those other habits, exercise and nutrition just become natural for them. So if you're finding yourself struggling to actually get into exercise and nutrition, if you're finding those hard entryways into a healthier lifestyle, take a step back and start with being more mindful and getting rid of the negative thoughts and start replacing the positive thoughts. And you will be shocked how easy exercise and nutrition actually become.
Yes, you are to the point. And as you mentioned, that when I started my self-transformation journey, like exercise was not in the agenda. So it becomes part of my lifestyle slowly and eventually. Because once I saw the benefit of exercise, as you know, that it releases happy hormones like endorphins, dopamine, serotonin in our brain. And as you mentioned, that if exercise is for the body, it's about mental strength. When you are doing exercise, it is giving you the mental fitness, because our mind is not a muscle, but it works or acts like a muscle. The more stronger your body is, the more stronger your mind is going to become. And you are able to handle different kind of stress in your day-to-day activity, because that's how you are able to deal with the stress. Otherwise, these stresses will be always there for everyone. So we have to, what are the things which can reduce the stress? And exercise is the best form of medicine, which has been found in research that if you have anxiety, stress, depression, that's the best thing to do is do exercise. Even if we are walking it, the research has shown that it decreases the cardiovascular disease by 32%.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing, all the benefits of it, right? But I think there's so many people, they struggle with it because we live in a day and age where everything is right now, right? We feel like constantly we're being bombarded with something else to have to do, an email from somebody that needs an urgent response, a phone call that has to be taken right now, right? There's always something coming up that is keeping us from doing what we want to do. And I find for so many of the people that I've worked with over the years, that it's not until they can let go of some of those expectations that they can truly start to get this.
Yes, definitely. No, we have to do it for ourselves. When I see my life, I'm not comparing myself with anybody else.
Right.
You know, I see myself as, okay, if I'm able to improve from what I was yesterday, then I'm doing better. And that should be the criteria. What happens is we start comparing our life with somebody else's life. Oh, see, he's doing so much, and I should do these things at the same time. And that makes somebody unhealthy and unhappy at the same time. Because the ultimate goal is we want it to be happy at the same time.
Yeah. So one thing we haven't really touched on yet, and then really want to get into some of the specifics of how do we get into meditation here. But one thing that I love about this idea of taking some time out for some mindfulness meditation is it gives us an opportunity to start to really connect with what's actually important. And that's the point I was getting at earlier with talking about making time for things and feeling like we have all these other things pressing for our time. If when we constantly allow ourselves to be bombarded by other people, we do not get a chance to actually know what's important to us. And so these moments of silence and solitude are very helpful. And really hearing that inner voice and really understanding what is it that my body is telling me that it needs. Because our bodies are always communicating with us.
Yes. as you're touching the point of meditation, how somebody can connect it to your own mind and body. And the best thing which I have figured it out is when you do mindfulness or meditation, when you wake, that is the best time. Why? Again, I will give you a little bit of scientific explanation because I like to talk about brain and science. And when we are sleeping, we are in delta wave. When we wake up, we are in theta wave. And 10 minutes or 15 minutes after waking, we will go to alpha waves. And then as we are speaking with each other, we are at beta waves. So when you wake up, 10 minutes, if you are able to meditate, you are able to reach your subconscious mind. And you can be as calm as possible and you can direct your day the way you wanted to do it because it will stay with you. Once you have, you know how you want your day to be because that is the best time to change your day and your life at the same time. And the same thing is when you are sleeping. Before you go to bed, if you do 10 minutes of 15 minutes of mindfulness, again, there is a window of in your subconscious mind. Because again, you are going from alpha to theta to delta waves. And if you wanted to reprogram your brain for serenity or equanimity, that is the point. And that is helpful for so many of people because when we are actively thinking all the time, it becomes harder for us to go from beta waves to the alpha waves and delta waves. And we are not able to sleep because we are not able to stop our internal chat. Once you are in the prefrontal lobe, it becomes so much easier to go to alpha and theta waves, and it will make your life so much happy and fruitful.
Yeah. So for people who maybe don't know all the different wavelengths and what that means, so help us understand a little bit about that. Like when you talk about the importance of being within a certain wavelength when we do these mindfulness sessions.
So basically, when we are doing this mindfulness session, we, in any period from morning to evening, we are in beta waves. It means we are actively working, we are thinking, we are doing the things which is necessary. And we have to learn to toggle between alpha waves to theta waves so that we can switch our brain whichever way we wanted to do it. Because we cannot always think all the time. We want that calmness and serenity in our life at the same time. Once that it's easier to do it when you sit quiet, that you are able to change your brain waves from beta waves to alpha waves and alpha waves to theta waves and beta waves to delta.
So what does it mean to when we change to alpha waves? What's happening?
Alpha waves, when you are changing to that wavelength, you are making yourself more calm. It means you have much less information in your prefrontal lobe. The blood flow in the prefrontal lobes gets less, so you can quieten your mind. So that's what it is happening, because we cannot think all that.
Right. And then what about it outside and delta waves? What are those about?
It's a resting phase where you are not asleep, but you are in a sleep mode. And that is the phase which is easier to program your subconscious mind. Because you are right now toggling between sleep, deep sleep and near sleep. And that is the phase that you wanted to implement something, that you wanted to become better at something. You want to implement affirmation or visualization. That is the period you can use that period to make yourself better.
Yeah. So for somebody wanting to get started with this, and they're like, you know what, I'll give this a try and see if it works for me. What is like the first, like day one step that you would recommend for somebody other than downloading the app, which we're going to get to here in a second?
Yes. The first thing anybody can do is go to a quiet place. It can be your room. You can just pick a quiet place. You can sit in your chair, sofa, you can lie down, whatever you feel comfortable. You need a position which is comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pick an object, you can pick a thing, or you can have an image you want to concentrate, or you can just concentrate on your breath. And just try to concentrate what is happening right now at that time. And your mind is going to wander in 10 or 15 seconds, which is fine. Just bring your thought back to your original thought, whatever you are thinking. If you are imagining a beach, just have an image of that beach. Your thought is going to go to different places. Just bring your thought to that original places. That's what you have to do. And eventually you will get better and better.
Okay. And started off, I think a lot of times people do tend to try to do too much, right? They're like, I'm going to commit to 10 minutes of meditation every day or whatever. And just confirm for me if this is accurate or not. But I feel with something like this, it's not necessarily about getting the benefit day one, right? It's about starting to build the skills. And that means if you only can do 30 seconds even, it's just that's 30 seconds of practice time that you're getting. And over time, you just get longer and longer and you get better and better.
Yes, as Dalai Lama said, start with 30 seconds every day. And once you're doing 30 seconds, you will gradually increase it and you can become better. And once you see the benefits, and that is the hardest part, why people don't indulge in meditation on mindfulness, because you cannot measure it. It's not tangible. Once you are able to see the benefits, it takes 4 to 6 weeks or around 8 weeks. Once you see the benefits, it becomes so much natural for you to sit in, because this is helping me so much. For me, it has become a habit. I know that I have to sit in the morning and before going to bed. I know the benefits. I know it keeps me so much calm. It gives me so much happiness that I cannot just not do it. It has become so much internalized now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Just that matter of looking at it more from a long term. And don't feel like you have to do a lot. Just start where you are and allow it to just naturally become a part of your day. And once you can commit to a minimum amount of time, committing to the action itself, your brain will start to react to it. And as you do, the experience that I've had for myself, as well as a lot of clients, has been, and not with just something like this, but with anything really, is the more that you do it, the more your brain starts to become familiar with it, the more it starts to become easy to actually implement into your day, into your routine.
Oh, yes. It's a different, anything we are trying to change, it takes time. But yeah, as long as you are giving your time and effort, you are going to become better and better. Like, I'm a self-taught meditator. I never went to anybody. Anybody can learn through their own experience. You might fail some of the days, which is fine. Nobody is perfect all the day. You might think some of the days that you are going backwards, which happened with everyone. But, you know, having the habit of sitting for at least 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes and gradually improving it to 20 minutes over a course of 1 year or 2 years, you will see that it has changed the course of your life.
Awesome. And for those who maybe want to get a little extra help, tell us a little bit about the app, how people can find it, and what they can expect when they download it.
So people can download the free app, which is called Lovo, from Play Store or App Store. There is no subscription fee. And in that app, there is 4 sections. First is about meditation. We have guided meditation and unguided meditation. Then we have a section about exercise, that, you know, the app will count the number of steps you are taking, the calories burned, and the distance traveled. And you can connect your smartwatch, like any kind of watch, with that app. And it will get all the data from the smartwatch to the app. Then there is a section about water intake, because as you know that we live in cold countries and we don't drink enough water. And if we don't drink enough water, it can lead to anxiety or depression. So that app is going to remind you, okay, drink enough water every 2 or 3 hours. And the last section is about sleep analysis. Like it will give you an analysis of your sleep, light sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep. And you can connect your smartwatch again, and you can get all the information from your smartwatch. There are good things at the same time, and you can download my free book from the app. There is a link provided. If anybody wants to read my book, The Man with Zero Talent, it's again available there for free.
Okay, awesome. And I will include in the show notes links to the app on both the store as well as Google Play. And also, if you have an Amazon link or anything to the book, I'll include that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, all the links has been provided to you, so you can share all the links and they can get the free version, which might be more useful to the audience.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll definitely leave that up to them, how they want to go about getting it, because people prefer different things in different formats. So we'll let them make their own decision on that one. But Sanjeev, I wanted to say just thank you for coming today. Really appreciate it. Loved our conversation. We got to really talk a lot about just habits in general and change and give people some really useful and helpful tools for starting to create that change in their life using mindfulness and meditation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve, for inviting me in your show. I think your audience will get some of the useful tips from you as well as me. You are very knowledgeable, and I appreciate that I have a conversation with you.
I appreciate that. Do you have any final thoughts that you would like to leave the audience with today?
The final piece of advice that I want to give to your audience is improve your self-talk. Why? Because we all talk very negative with us. When we are saying to ourselves, I'm not good at something, we are telling our conscious as well as subconscious mind that we don't need any help in this matter. And I have seen so many people saying that I'm not good at maths, or I'm not good at science, or I have anxiety. So rather than saying this, say to yourself, you are getting better, you are a genius, you love yourself. Use affirmation, visualization, or mantra to improve your self-talk, which will change your belief. And once you change your belief, you can become a better version of yourself.
Love it, man. That's great advice. Definitely something I think will make a huge difference for a lot of people is just changing that self-talk. And that's part of your mindfulness and meditation, right? When you're doing that and you start to hear that negative self-talk kick in, when you start to have those negative thoughts, that's a great opportunity to start just becoming aware of them and start to think about how can you reframe them into a positive. So I love it. Great advice. And I just want to remind everyone that none of us are born unshakable, but we can all become unshakable. See y'all next time.
Thank you for listening to the Unshakable Habits Podcast with Coach Stephen Box. Be sure to hit the subscribe button and help us spread the word by sharing the podcast with other men. If you're ready to create unshakable habits, you can learn more and connect with us at unshakablehabits.com.